Morrison.
May it please the court, my name is Ian Morrison. I represent Blue Cross Blue Shield Association and the non-contributory National Long-Term Disability Program, which is administered by employees of the association. This case concerns the proper application of the arbitrary and capricious standard of review that is applied in many claims for benefits under ERISA that are brought before the federal courts. There's no dispute in this case that that's the applicable standard, and this case is before the court on appeal from summary judgment for the plaintiff. The district court awarded her benefits under the program. We respectfully request that this court reverse the summary judgment for the plaintiff and remand the case with instructions to enter judgment for the association because the district court misapplied the standard of review and essentially reweighed, as is apparent from the district court's opinion, reweighed the conflicting medical evidence that was in the administrative record to come to its own conclusion, which exceeds the scope of review under the arbitrary and capricious standard. The standard of review for denials of benefit claims, as I mentioned, is referred to as the arbitrary and capricious standard, and this court has repeatedly described that as being one of the least demanding standards of review under law. The test is not whether the decision at issue was correct, whether the court would have reached the same decision if it was making that in the first instance, but is simply whether the decision is reasonable in light of the evidence. And in this court's decision in Davis, which is cited in the briefs, the court reiterated that the question is really whether the decision of the plan administrator has rational support in the record. And here, clearly, the decision of the plan administrator did have rational support in the record. The medical evidence in the case consisted of several hundred pages of medical records and medical opinions. There was extensive follow-up by employees of the association with the doctors or doctors' offices where Ms. Speciale was treated to attempt to elucidate what their opinions were. There were four primary treating physicians in the case, Dr. Keene, Dr. Snyder-Smith, Dr. O'Shaughnessy, and Dr. Winnie. When the claim was initially filed, and it's important to keep in mind the time frame that's at issue, Ms. Speciale stopped working in November of 2000 and under the program became eligible as of May of 2001. In the June 2001 time frame, Dr. Snyder-Smith and Dr. O'Shaughnessy both opined that she was completely disabled. Dr. Snyder-Smith, the family practitioner who treated Ms. Speciale, said that she was disabled with a primary diagnosis of multiple sclerosis. But that diagnosis was still being tested by various specialists. She was being subjected to various procedures to determine whether she, in fact, did have MS. The association followed up throughout the summer to attempt to determine the outcome of those tests, which were ultimately negative. The neurologist concluded that she did not have MS. At that point, the association...
But you attach much too much weight to that because there's a difference between symptoms and diagnosis. So clearly, presumably for them to diagnose her as having multiple sclerosis, it was because she had symptoms, and the symptoms may be the same symptoms that Winnie found. So I don't see the fact that their diagnosis was erroneous bears on what they observed.
Your Honor, you're correct that there is a difference between symptoms and diagnosis, and the diagnosis is important not in the abstract, not because the association denied the claim because her diagnosis was not proven. The importance of this issue of the MS diagnosis or the rejection of the MS diagnosis is that after it was rejected by the neurologists, the association followed up with Dr. O'Shaughnessy and Dr. Snyder-Smith, who had both said that Ms. Speciale was disabled. Dr. O'Shaughnessy couldn't be reached after several attempts, which are documented in the record. Dr. Snyder-Smith said, she doesn't have MS, she has fibromyalgia, and I'm not treating her for the pain associated with that disease, and that was all he was willing to say. Dr. Keene, another physician who was a physiatrist treating Ms. Speciale for her fibromyalgia and related conditions, explicitly said that she, in response to questions from the association, that she could perform a sedentary light-duty job with certain limited restrictions. His medical records
sedentary
also...
Sedentary and light aren't the same thing, right?
No. And I think it's evident what he is referring to in his affirmative answer to the can she perform a sedentary light duty job when he lists his restrictions. He says no fully bending or twisting, and she needs to be able to change position frequently. So obviously he's not talking about a job where she would sit all day long, but she should be able to move around as she needed to. And his medical records, which were examined by the plan program administrator, are consistent with his view that she did not have a disabling impairment. He makes various references to her condition, describing her as having no acute distress, says that in April of 2001 she's doing much better after returning from vacation. She's doing dramatically better in June, doing fairly well at that time, and he was asked during that meeting with Ms. Speciale to fill out disability papers and declined to do so according to the medical records. There's never any evidence in the record that she followed up with him and again asked him to submit disability paperwork for her. His opinion, Dr. Keene's opinion, never varied. He was cited by the administrator in the initial claim denial as being the most convincing doctor on this point because of the consistency between his medical records and his opinion, the fact that he'd affirmatively answered a direct question on whether she was disabled or not, and that after the MS diagnosis had changed, his opinion was consistent.
Is he a specialist like Dr. Winnie?
He is a physiatrist. A physiatrist is at least that's the term he describes himself as in the medical records. That's a physical medicine and rehabilitation doctor, whose specialty is the treatment of pain and recovery from a variety of injuries. They're often one of the primary specialists who treat people with fibromyalgia and similar conditions. So that was why the association at the initial claim level relied so heavily on Dr. Keene. After that was brought to the claimant's attention in the denial letter, she didn't submit any contradictory evidence from Dr. Keene. Also didn't submit any additional evidence from Dr. Snyder-Smith or O'Shaughnessy to clarify their opinions post the MS diagnosis. As a result, the association was left with conflicting medical evidence really between Keene and Winnie, and in conjunction with its review by the independent medical reviewer that the association retained, reached the conclusion, which we believe was reasonable given the record, that she was not qualified for benefits, was not disabled within the meaning of the program. And because that decision was reasonable, although the district court may have disagreed with it, the district court should have upheld the decision, and we ask this court to reverse.
Okay, well thank you very much, Mr. Morrison. Ms. Goldblum?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, I'm Marcy Goldblum on behalf of the plaintiff appellee, Janet Speciale. I'd like to clear up a couple of things first. In terms of Blue Cross Blue Shield has said throughout the course of this that there's four physicians and that three out of the four were saying that she was able to work, and then even the fourth one changed her mind and indicated that Ms. Speciale could work. And when you actually look at what's going on in factually, that's not exactly the case. This is an important matter that we're all here about today, not just for Ms. Speciale, but for all claimants who may be entitled to benefits where there's possibly an arbitrary and capricious standard of review involved. Because make no mistake about it, Blue Cross Blue Shield would really like the arbitrary and capricious standard to be no review at all or very little. What they've said is that it was an abuse of discretion and that Judge Kaur didn't apply the proper standard because he weighed the evidence. He didn't impermissibly weigh the evidence. He looked at the evidence. And even in this court's Davis decision, the court said that even arbitrary and capricious review requires that the administrator articulate an appropriate explanation that's satisfactory.
Well, in his argument, he has particularly emphasized Dr. Keene's.
Well, and Dr. Keene's report, I think, is very interesting because when you look at what actually is there, it's not clear-cut. Blue Cross Blue Shield says Dr. Keene endorsed her ability to work, and it's not quite that clear. On June 4th, And we're looking at page 133 of the record. Dr. Keene notes that although steroids had helped her with a recent exacerbation, the Xanaflex she was taking for muscle spasms was making her feel sleepy, lightheaded, or dizzy. Then in August of 2001, Blue Cross Blue Shield sends Dr. Keene this form. And the form says, as of May 1st, 2001, in your opinion, was Janet Special physically capable of performing the duties of a sedentary or light-duty job with restrictions? The form says, yes, no. If no, please identify the objective impairments that would have prevented her from working a sedentary job with restrictions. Now, what happens is the form expects if the answer is yes, the doctor just moves on. But what happened here is that Dr. Keene checked yes, but then he identified objective impairments that would have interfered with her ability to work. He notes back pain, leg spasms, weakness, fatigue. Then he added that she would need frequent changes of position, unable to bend, twist fully. So that's not exactly clearly endorsement of her ability to work on a full-time basis. And then we have Dr. Winnie, who submits, we submit in the appeal, a full, very detailed RFC assessment where she goes into the fact, where she details the 11 of 18 trigger points for the fibromyalgia. She details that this is someone who's not going to be able to sustain a work day, that she has interferences with concentration and attention. And then Dr. Blonsky, and this is another troubling part, Dr. Blonsky was the doctor for Blue Cross Blue Shield who reviewed the case initially. Then when the appeal is filed, he reviews his own opinion. Now, technically, this decision, this claim was filed in April of 2001, slightly before the revision of 29 CFR 2560. However, there's a fundamental fairness issue involved here. The analysis is, if we were having this argument today in front of Judge Kaur, saying, please review your own opinion, that's akin to what happened when Special filed her appeal, and the same doctor who had recommended that her case be denied is reviewing his own opinion.
Well, Dr. Blonsky wasn't the decision maker, though. He was serving in the capacity of a retained expert. The analogy that you've given doesn't hold up.
Well, it does in the sense that he's the only medical reviewer that Blue Cross Blue Shield relied on. And if they're not relying on his analysis of the complicated medical picture, all they're left with is a nurse. And under ERISA law, that's not adequate.
Well, actually, the medical review committee and the appellate review decision maker, I think it's Barbara Grant.
Barbara Grant, that's correct.
Looked at the entire record, not just Dr. Blonsky's report. They looked at all the records from the four treating physicians.
Well, then let's look, though, at what those four doctors say. And I think, actually, in their reply brief, appellant says...
Maybe we could just focus on what I think is a problem in this case with the district court's decision, and that is that the primary reason that Blue Cross denied this claim, and it was upheld on the administrative internal appeal, was that after MS was ruled out as the diagnosis and the source of the pain, and the focus shifted to the fibromyalgia, which she had apparently had for 20 years, none of the treating physicians who had previously diagnosed her as disabled or who had opined that she was disabled were willing to renew that, and that the remaining two doctors conflicted. And so what the company was faced with in this claim is a conflict in the evidence, and based on that conflict in the evidence, they resolved it in the way that they did with the denial. And Judge Kaur, in not only deciding to the contrary, but actually taking the affirmative step of awarding benefits, didn't really address that. And that was the heart of the denial. And what we do on these cases is review the reasons that the plan administrator offered for denying the claim, rather than looking at the case in a de novo plenary sort of a fashion. And so while Judge Kaur stated the standard of review correctly. He didn't apply it. He really gave the case a plenary review.
Well, I have to disagree with you in the sense that what Judge Kaur said is that the plan didn't explain how it was reviewing. He didn't say Blue Cross Blue Shield argues that Judge Kaur told them that they in the decision that they should have given more weight to Dr. Winnie's RFC assessment, which isn't actually what he says. What he says is that they failed to explain their position, and under Davis,
that's not really true. Both decisions, both the initial denial and the appellate decision affirming it, did explain why there was a conflict in the evidence and they were resolving it against her claim.
They say that after the MS had been ruled out, that they could basically jettison the treatment and symptoms that were related to that, and that she then had this fibromyalgia for 20 years and had worked with it. Well, first of all, as Judge Posner pointed out, the fact that the MS had been ruled out doesn't make all of those symptoms, make all the positive test results that she had along that way go away. Furthermore, Dr. Winnie is the only doctor who is the professional who's the expert of choice in a fibromyalgia case is the rheumatologist, Dr. Winnie. And in stating that she had had this she'd had the fibromyalgia for 20 plus years, that's the same reasoning that's been rejected by courts, the Hawkins case particularly. She had fibromyalgia, she'd worked with it for a while, but even Blue Cross Blue Shield has recognized that she got worse. Now, did she get worse because the fibromyalgia got worse? Did she get worse because she was having some kind of neurological symptoms that hadn't yet been identified? For instance, Dr. O'Shaughnessy told Dr. Blonsky that he thought that there was a collagen vascular disease involved. But the majority of her treatment after that time shifted to Dr. Winnie, and Dr. Winnie unequivocally says that this is what's going on, and in great detail. And the district court, I don't think that the district court reweighed the evidence. I think the district court looked at the whole and said, you didn't really set forth a satisfactory explanation of what's going on here.
Then why didn't you send it back?
You know, I think he looked at the fact that he found that it had been that it had been arbitrary and capricious, and thought that Ms. Special had been without benefits for such a long time, but thought that it was a just thing to do. If this court thinks that remand so that a proper articulation can be rendered, then that's certainly one remedy. But
that's actually the general remedy, the preferred remedy, isn't it?
Excuse me?
That's actually the preferred remedy. But I mean, generally, there's a finding that a decision is arbitrary and capricious, sent back for a do-over.
That does tend to be the most general remedy, yes, indeed.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Goldblum. Mr. Morrison, how much time does he have? 2 minutes?
I could briefly address a couple of points. First, on this issue of the adequacy of the reasoning, which seems to have been the reason why the district court granted summary judgment for the plaintiff, there really can be no question that the decisions at the claim and appeal level adequately explain the reasons. They're several pages long. They recite what evidence was considered and balance the evidence and come to the outcome. Which leads to another point, which is important to keep in mind, which is that after receiving the claim decision, which points out this problem of communicating with O'Shaughnessy and Snyder-Smith after the MS diagnosis is rejected, points out the MRC's reliance on Dr. Keene's opinion, what's submitted on appeal is additional information from Dr. Winnie and a couple pages of medical records from Dr. Keene, the latter which are really consistent with his prior records and certainly don't say that she is disabled. The claimant had every opportunity to submit clarifying information, could have gone back to these doctors and ask them to reaffirm their position, which might have made a difference. But given what was in front of the administrator at the time the decision was made, it's clear that it was reasonable at a minimum. It's clear that it was rationally related to the evidence in the record for the administrator to decide the way it did, and therefore we believe that the court should simply reverse the summary judgment with directions to enter summary judgment for the association. Obviously, if the court feels that the reasoning for the decision that's presented in the claimant appeal letters was inadequate, then Judge Sykes is correct that the preferred remedy is a remand so that the basis can be articulated more clearly. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Morrison and Mr. Goldblum.